Well, good morning, church. No, I'm not doing a song today. You might be a little bit confused. I was actually confused this morning, too. I actually sat on the worship team's side. I was told to sit on the other side because that's where the preacher sits. So one quick announcement. If you are a child and you're still here, you are welcome to go to Children's Church. We have some amazing Children's Church programs, so you can go ahead and be part of that. So how many of you guys have ever heard the phrase, it's not what you know, but it's who you know? Have you guys heard that before? Have you guys heard that phrase? You know, growing up, I knew I wasn't going to be the cool kid. I was the kid who was just, I was in the chess club. You know, and it's cool now, but back then at lunchtime, I'd be with the teacher. Anyway, I knew that if I wanted to make it in life, I'd have to associate myself with the cool kids. So I did my best to try to hang out with the cool kids at school because I wasn't cool on my own. At least I didn't think I was cool. I was a late bloomer in life. And then that continued on into college where, you know, I joined a fraternity, I hung out with all the cool kids, and I really benefited from that, right? I really, by association, I was hanging out with the cool group at school, then I was cool myself. You know, this continued on into church as well. You know, during college, I went off, I moved away from home. I went to the local megachurch at the time with the celebrity pastor, with the cool worship and the cool church, and I was part of that cool church group. And I remember thinking, you know, the pastor at the time, you know, we had one of those celebrity pastors where he had books, he was up on stage all the time. He wasn't someone that you can just approach like Pastor Frank, you know, you can meet with him. He was someone that you had to, he was like at a distance, you can't really book his time because he was so busy. And I remember I was thinking to myself, hey, if I can get to meet him, won't I be so cool? So I had a friend at the time who knew his executive assistant, got me a one-on-one appointment with this celebrity pastor. I won't say the name, but that doesn't matter with my story. But I got a one-on-one appointment with this celebrity pastor, and apparently I had done something right. I had impressed him enough that I was invited to be part of his discipleship group. And in my mind, I'm like, whoa, I'm in. I'm a cool guy now. I'm part of the cool church group. I'm part of this cool discipleship group. And I remember my friends were so jealous. I had a friend who was serving in ministry for so long at that church. And he was saying, you know, I've been serving at this church for so many years and I've never been invited to a group like this. But look at you. So I felt pretty good about myself. So I went in on Friday. So for 2 years, I was part of this discipleship group. What was interesting about that group is, you know, these guys were amazing. These guys were like CEOs of their companies. These guys were, we had ex-Navy SEALs in that group. We had folks that were Olympians, amazing people. And they shared amazing stories of how they were just broken, messed up. And it really like jarred me for a little bit. Because, hey, what am I doing in this group? And when it came my turn to share, I just kind of say, pass. I'm good. You know, I was just content just being a part of this group, but I didn't really want to share and be a part of things going on. You know, I think sometimes that Christmas can kind of be like that, where we like to be a part of the hubble and bustle and all the different things. You know, it's only been week two, and I've been to, I think, 3 Christmas parties. I've been part of a couple of presentations, Christmases, and nothing against Christmas. I love Christmas. I love the journey of just putting up ornaments and being with family. But sometimes it feels like we just want to be part of the Christmas season, but not really involved in it. You know, I titled this message, Are We Just Pursuing the Presence of Christmas? Presence as in gifts. Or are we really making space for the presence of Jesus? You know, I think about that group that I was a part of many years ago. I think I was just so caught up in being a part of that group that I wasn't really caught up being a part of the presence of being with those people and sharing my life with them. I was just caught up with the prestige of being a part and joining that discipleship group with this celebrity pastor. And actually, a funny story, my wife, one of the main reasons why she was attracted to me was because I was part of this group. Because this pastor would talk and say, yeah, I lead this discipleship group on Fridays, and these are a great group of men. And I remember my wife saying, I want to marry one of those men. Well, it worked. And so I guess it worked in my benefit. But as I look back, you know, could I have gotten a lot more from that if I really went all in and really shared the stories and the difficulties going on in my life like the other men in that group? Or was I just content just being on the sidelines? You know, another way to show it, I'm going to let my dad up. He's going to give me a present. He doesn't know about this. I just told him about this morning. You know, he's used me as an illustration for years and years. So this is my way of getting back at him. and using him as an illustration. So picture this, like my dad gives me a present. What's something that you really, really want in life? So for me, maybe it's tickets to, you know, this the next Star Wars movie. Hey, you can stay here, Dad. No, you can't go yet. You can't go yet. You're still here. Right? He gives me this awesome present. Right? He knows that I really want this. He's been thinking about me. It's something that he handpicked for me. Something that would really give me a lot of joy and give me a lot of purpose. But I take this present, and I'm just telling everyone, hey, look at this cool present, guys. Look at the cool packaging. Look at all these awesome things that are part of it. And I totally ignore my dad. Look how sad he is. Look how sad my dad is. But I totally ignore the purpose behind it. I miss out on the presence of hanging out with my dad and enjoying what it means to him for us together. You know, I'm just admiring the wrapping. And, well, this is actually really cool. Like this little shell here, decorative shell. And I talk about this. I spend all day talking about this. But I miss out on the presence and hanging out with my dad. Sometimes I feel like church is like that too. Thanks, Dad. You can sit now.
Here, take your present back.
He took it back. But, you know, I think sometimes we can get so caught up in all the things that surround church, right? Our ticket to heaven, right? Our ticket that we are forgiven. And yes, it's true that we are forgiven. Yes, it's true that we are sinners saved. But is it possible that there's so much more that God wants for us in this journey of faith? Is it possible that being in the presence of our Savior can give us so much more hope, joy, peace, especially during this holiday season? I don't know about you, but these past couple of years have been pretty crazy. And there's so many things going on in the world. We just talked about things going on in Ukraine, internationally, even locally, the politics, economies, so many things going on. And I don't know about you, but I think there's so much more that God's inviting us into to trust him with everything going on in this world. Can I say a quick prayer for us before we get started? God, this morning as we just enter into your presence, can we just be known of the things that you are doing? Can we be aware of the ways that you are inviting us? God, would you speak to us today? Would the person up here on the pulpit decrease, and may you increase in people's lives and hearts? God, we want more of you today. In name I pray. Amen. So today I'm going to unpack a story today in Mark 5. And this is a story about two people who had an amazing encounter with Jesus. And you'll see as they encounter Jesus and they journey in their spiritual walk, that they left Jesus expecting one thing, but they left completely transformed and different. And I'm hoping that as we unpack this passage together, we can get a sense of what's that more that God is inviting us into. Okay, we're talking about presents. A quick thing. Do you guys know what the top five most wanted presents are this holiday season? I did an Amazon Google search, and I found the top five things. You know, for moms, do you guys know what EverJ pajamas are? I don't know what they are, but they're supposed to be just luxurious pajamas. That's the number one gift, most searched for gift for moms. So kids, pay attention. For wives, there's this Tory Burch designer handbag, right? I don't even know who that is, but maybe I should. But there's this designer handbag, a purse that a lot of wives have been looking out for. For men, and actually I've wanted this too, an outdoor pizza oven was the number one search for gift. I know, and that's pretty cool. Like you can make the oven outside. For boys, the number one gift, and you know, Switch, Xbox, all these gaming consoles. And the other number one gift, which I actually have right here, is AirPods. I think it's a pretty cool gift. You can listen to them all the time. You know, so I know if you're just searching online, a lot of things out there on what to get, what the top five gifts are. Well, today, can I give you the top five reasons why we should pursue the presence of Jesus over presents? Is that okay? Can I share that with you today? So let's read this passage, and we're going to pull it up, and this is in Mark 5. So verse 21, Mark 5. When Jesus had again crossed over by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him while he was by the lake. Then one of the synagogue leaders, named Jairus, came, and when he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet. He pleaded earnestly with him, "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went to him. A large crowd followed and pressed around him. And a woman who was there had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of so many doctors and had spent all that she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. Then she heard about Jesus. She came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched my clothes? You see the people crowding around you, his disciples answered, and yet you ask, who touched me? But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet and, trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came from the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader, and said, your daughter is dead. They said, why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, Jesus told them, don't be afraid, just believe. He did not let anyone follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the leader, Jesus saw a commotion and people crying and wailing. He went in and said to them, why all this commotion and wailing? The child is not dead, but asleep. But they laughed at him. And he put them all out. He took the child's father and mother and the disciples who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said, Talitha cum, which means, little girl, I say to you, get up. Immediately the girl stood up and began to walk around. She was about 12 years old. At this time, they were completely astonished. He gave strict orders not to let anyone know this and told them to give her something to eat. May God bless the reading of this word. You know what's cool about this story? I don't know if you ever looked at this before, but we see the 12-year-old girl and we see the woman who was bleeding for 12 years. And that immediately tells me, I think these stories are connected. And as we're reading this, we should see these two stories together combined as a package. And I think if we unpack it, we'll see some cool ways that Jesus was meeting both of these. So the first point of why do we need to pursue Jesus? And this is a very simple one. The number one reason why we need to pursue Jesus and his presence is because we need Jesus. You know, it's a very simple ask, a very simple word. You know, if we look at this passage, we see the synagogue leader and we also see the bleeding woman. Right? We can look at all their stories, but what they brought them in common is that there are two people who knew that they needed Jesus. You know, and it's kind of the simplicity of this that I really, really appreciate. But I also recognize this is something that's very, very difficult to live out in our daily lives. Right? Because I don't know how long you've been a Christian. I know I've called my Christian a long time. But even for me today, it is very difficult for me. I can probably sing it, oh, we need Jesus in songs and worship. But to actually live it out, live my life in a way that's dependent on him. You know, I know we live in a culture today that prizes independence and the strength that you come from pulling yourself up and doing everything by yourself. But to say that, hey, I'm dependent on Jesus, that I need him for everything that I do. If I really examine my heart, that's really, really hard for me to say. So earlier this year, you know, I went through some pretty difficult, difficult part of my journey. I'll say even the past couple of years. Do you guys know what chicken pox is, shingles, hives? So around March time, I just broke out my entire body in these painful shingles and hives. And I remember talking to the doctor and they were saying, you know, you're way too young to be having this. You know, usually at your age, this is something that's stress-induced. Are you stressed? And I'll say, no, of course not, right? You know, I'm doing fine. Everything is fine. You know, everything that's going on is, you know, I'm managing it. I'm taking care of my family. I'm living that Christian leader, spiritual life. You know, everything is good. And they asked me again, are you sure you're okay? Are you sure that there's nothing else going on? You know, it took me a long time. I actually had to the point where I actually had to go to counseling and go to some therapy and Christian counseling to kind of unpack that. Yes, you know, maybe there is some stress going on in my life. Maybe there's some undealt with worries and fears that I haven't really been exposing or sharing to anybody. Maybe I've been carrying a lot of this burden that I just haven't been sharing because I think I can do it all on my own. I remember my counselor was telling me, Josh, you talk about all these things you're doing, but you are not Jesus. You need Jesus. And it was so difficult for me to kind of reframe my thinking that, yeah, but I got to take care of my family. I got to take care of the church. I got to take care of all the things going on, my work, my job, my employees, people that I'm caring for. I got to take care of all these things. But Josh, who are you letting take care of you? Who are you inviting to take care of you in this season? You know, especially the past couple of years where I've lost family members to COVID, or I've just tried, we had a baby during COVID. We tried to do all these crazy things. I just wasn't asking for help or inviting Jesus into the deepest and darkest areas that I was going through. And even now, I'm still trying to unpack what that means for me and the grief. And, you know, if you're on your own journey of figuring that out, you know, that's a great place to be. But for me, it was so hard for me to say, Jesus, I need you. And I don't know if this is resonating with you today, but here are some passages I can share with you that really resonated with me during that season. It still is. In 2 Corinthians 12:9, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Let's let those words sit with us a little bit. Here's another one. Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know what to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings that are too deep for words. In Philippians, it also says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. You know, a couple of years ago, I was doing a mission trip in Africa. And I remember, one thing I noticed is that in every single thing that they did with the missionaries that I was visiting, they were praying. They got into the car, they were praying. Right? They got out of the car, they were praying. They walked across the street, they went to church, they prayed. You know, before they ate, of course, we prayed. And I remember asking them, you know, why are you praying every single moment that you have? Like, and what they told me was so profound. They said, hey, when I get into this car, I don't know if it's going to start. So we trust that God will take care of us. And they said, when they get to our destination, we don't know if people are going to be there. We don't know if they're going to be okay. We don't have cell phone infrastructure. We're trusting that we're going to meet people, and we pray that it'll be okay. You know, for us in our culture and where we live, it's so easy. If we have a need, we go to the store and we go to the grocery store and pick it up. If we're sick, we can easily go to the hospital. And these are all good things, and I'm so thankful where we live and the infrastructure that we have. But I don't think we ever really put ourselves in situations where we're aware of our deep need for Jesus. And all I'm suggesting right now is, as simple as this statement is, what would it look like for us to really live it and to really say that we need Jesus and we want to invite him into the deepest and darkest and maybe scary areas of our lives that we have never invited Jesus into? All right, let me bring us to our next point. So if point number one is that we need Jesus, point number two is that relationship with Jesus should be above any of our position, power, or any of our affiliations. Did you guys notice that in verse 22, Jairus was a synagogue leader? You guys also know that during that time, Jesus wasn't very popular with the Pharisees and leaders of the time, right? He was seen actually as a threat to their organization, someone who was going to take over. And the Pharisees saw him as a potential usurper, you could say. But see, this religious leader, Jairus, was so desperate for Jesus that he was willing to let go of his position, his power, any of his affiliations, and not let any of that get in the way of pursuing Jesus. You see in the passage that he fell on his knees and pleaded to him. That would be as if you think of someone that you respect, you know, maybe one of the leaders or one of the senators or whoever, or religious leaders of the day, or even the president fall on their knees before Jesus and demonstrate, hey, I need you. I think about us. Are we willing to lay all of that down in our pursuit of Jesus? I know there are probably many of us here with fancy degrees or affiliations or positions. Are we willing to say that our most important affiliation should be that for Jesus? I even think about maybe some of us here are part of maybe there's so many movements for the past year. Political parties that we've run for. You know, I don't want to get political in anything, but can we say that our allegiance to Jesus is more important than any of those allegiances that we have? Can we say that our pursuit for Christ is more than any of these other things that we post about online or these marches that we go to? Can we say that our pursuit of Jesus, we can lay all that down because we know that only Jesus can save? You know, the more and more that I'm growing in my Christian faith, I'm seeing that there's no structure, no movement, no organization here on earth that can compare to the saving power of Jesus. Would we be willing to lay down everything that we have to follow him? All right, let's continue on. What's cool about this passage is there's actually another person in this passage that was completely different from this religious leader. Let's turn our attention to this bleeding woman, someone on the complete opposite side of the political socioeconomic spectrum. Verse 25, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors, had spent all that she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd, touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. And immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. So a couple things to unpack here. We know that the woman had done her best to be healed on her own. She went to all of the doctors. It says that she spent all that she had, used up all her resources, all her abilities to try to be freed on her own. And to no avail. None of the things that she did ever worked. And so that brings us to our third point, our third reason why we should be pursuing Jesus. Because Jesus succeeds where all other things have failed. Now, I don't know where you are in your journey of faith, but I wonder if there's some of us here who can resonate with that truth. Maybe there's something that you've been trying to work out on your own. Maybe you've just tried the sheer force of will to make things work out. You throw more money at it, more resources at it. You try to really make it work, but to your greatest avail, nothing is working. Nothing is happening to your benefit. You know, we'll have some good news for you today that Jesus can and will succeed where others have failed. You know, and let's read on, and I love this part. What happens after this woman is healed? Verse 30. At once Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciple asked. "And yet you ask, who touched me?" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." You know, I always thought that this part of the passage where Jesus wondered who touched him was a little bit odd, a little bit out of place. I mean, isn't Jesus supposed to be all-knowing, omniscient? Shouldn't he have already known what was happening in that moment? Shouldn't he have already been in that place and said, hey, this is what happened. This is the miracle. This is all part of it. You know, and I wonder if the reason why Jesus asked who touched me was less about him trying to figure it out and more about giving the woman an opportunity to reveal herself. Think about it, right? Jesus asked who touched me, But in that moment, the woman was already healed, right? In that moment, she already received what she had been working so hard, 12 years of her life, to try to heal herself of. She already received that healing. You know, the passage tells us she already, in that moment, healing had come into her body and she knew that she was healed. So she really could have left, right? At that moment, when Jesus said, "Who touched me?" she could have kind of walked off with her healing and went on her merry way, really fully healed of everything that she's been asking for, right? She didn't have to interact with Jesus. She didn't have to say, "Here I am," or reveal herself. But again, the fact that she did reveal herself, I think, is something so important and key for us to understand today. Let's read that verse again. Verse 32. But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, trembling with fear, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering." I think it's so important to just put ourselves in that moment and realize what must have been happening as this woman revealed herself. She did so by falling on her knees with great fear and trembling, telling Jesus everything that's happened, the whole truth. You know, meaning that this was something that was very, very uncomfortable for her. Fearful even. Scary. It was totally outside of what she wanted to do in that moment for that bleeding woman to do this. And you know, there could be many reasons why she was afraid. You know, it could be because she was shameful for all those years of suffering. You know, maybe she was considered unclean, because we know in that time, in that culture, if you've been bleeding, you're considered unclean. You're supposed to be away and apart from everyone. Maybe she didn't want to reveal that or draw attention to the fact that she was in the crowd when she wasn't supposed to be. Maybe she was ashamed of her sickness and the ways that she has failed over and over again, and people just kind of saw her as this person on the outcast of society who just can't get things figured out. There's probably so many different parts of her story that we don't know, but what we do know is that she told all of it to Jesus. We know that she came out of that place of just fear and laid it all at Jesus' feet. Because that woman who revealed everything to Jesus, Jesus was able to look her in the eye, call her daughter in front of everyone in that crowd that day, and honor her faith. You know, I think about this sometimes because we don't know really what the woman was thinking. But maybe there was a part of her that was thinking, "Did I do something wrong? Or would Jesus rebuke her? Or would Jesus punish her because she did something she wasn't supposed to be? Or maybe he would say, 'Hey, you're unclean. What are you doing here?'" You know, we don't know what she was thinking and where that fear was coming from. But what we do know is that in that moment when Jesus met her, we see what Jesus did. And she gave her something way more than she was asking for. Right? She wanted to be healed, physically healed of her ailment. But Jesus gave her a healing that was way grander than she ever could think or imagine. See, I think in that moment, that woman got a double healing. Not only was she healed physically, but she was given the opportunity to be healed holistically, emotionally, relationally, mentally, spiritually. I mean, I can't imagine those 12 years that she was suffering, the loneliness she must have felt being so isolated from the rest of her community, the idea of being branded as unclean for so long. How that must have taken a huge toll on her sense of purpose, her sense and identity. It's almost as if Jesus was saying to her in that moment, "Okay, you trusted me with the physical healing. Now will you trust me with so much more? Will you trust me with all of you? Will you trust me with your whole heart?" And I love what Jesus did as he called her daughter. In front of everyone that day, she was given a new identity. She wasn't anymore just this unclean person on the outskirts of that community. She was a daughter of the King. She was renewed and elevated to the status of being a daughter, a child of God. And what a cool opportunity that she wasn't just reconciled in that moment to Jesus, but she was reconciled to her community. She was brought back into the fold. Just because she was willing to say, here I am. I'm a broken person. I'm a pursuer of Jesus. You know, church, I wonder for many of us who have been following Jesus for a while, is God calling us into something more? Is God calling us to respond to his, who touched me? See, I know a lot of us are probably aware of the many benefits we get from the good news, probably aware of what it's like to be a Christian, follow Jesus, John 3:16, God so loved the world. But how many of us have really thought about the amazing gift of what God's given us and said, hey, is there more to this Christian journey? If I really give all of me to what this is going on. This is kind of what I was talking about earlier, right? When I was part of that group, I showed up on Sundays. I was part of that discipleship group. But when it came my turn to say and share really what was going on, I kind of let it pass. I was content just being a part of that discipleship group and not really bringing my whole self into that journey. You know, I believe there was a time in my Christian walk that I believe that being a follower of Jesus meant having everything figured out. I had to project this perfect image of being a good Christian father, husband, a leader. I was never willing to reveal to anyone that behind that exterior was this broken, messed up person that truly and deeply needed Jesus. You know, and I keep thinking to myself, why was I not letting God into the deepest and darkest and hurt area? Why was I not letting God? Would I be afraid that he'd be ashamed of me? Just like that bleeding woman, would I be afraid that he would turn me away? Would I be afraid that he's not enough to handle any of my deepest and darkest needs? You know, a little later from now and today, we're going to have an opportunity actually for prayer, and we're going to make time and space for this. And I wonder, for someone here, maybe the reason why you haven't come up and got asked for prayer is because maybe that feels a little scary. To come up and raise your hand or maybe walk up in front of the stage and say, I need prayer. There's something going on in my life that just I can't deal with. And maybe you're thinking, you know, I'd rather have someone else go up get prayer. They need Jesus more than me. Or I don't want to bother Jesus with my worries right now. I can figure it out on my own. I'll let someone else get prayed for. Maybe church, in this moment, this time, as you're thinking about this, there's something that you need to come to Jesus for. And as we pray later, maybe today is going to be an invitation for you to get prayed for. You know, later, every single person who's actually going to be praying up here, at one point, they prayed for me. They prayed for me. There's no shame in asking Jesus to pray and have people pray over you for things going on in your life. Please welcome it. Please welcome it. You know, church, I have some good news for you, and we talked about this last week. The good news is Emmanuel, God is with us. We all need Jesus. We are all weak. Apart from Jesus, we can do nothing. And when we say to him, and when we come down in fear, even if it's in fear and trembling, when we say, expose ourselves, say, here's the whole truth, Jesus, I'm laying it all at your feet. When we do those things, I think that's when Jesus can start the good work of inviting us into so much more, transforming us from the inside out, giving us a new identity just like he did to that bleeding woman. You know, I shared earlier about kind of my struggles with stress and figuring things out, you know, and even having to go to therapy and counseling just to kind of unpack that. You know, something amazing happened over the past couple of weeks is that I've started to be more open about these things and my mental health and my journey. And what I realized is that open up these amazing conversations with people that I never knew were dealing with similar things. Even at my workplace where, you know, I'm one of the few Christians in my workplace. And I think people always saw me at a distance of like, here's someone who's got it figured out. But once I started sharing that, hey, actually I don't, I started to get into more conversations about Jesus organically. More conversations about what God's doing in my life. And what I've learned and realized is that, you know, accolades and accomplishments isn't what connects people. It's this deep need for Jesus that can really connect people. This deep need for something more. And that brings me to point number four. Just like that bleeding woman who's willing to bear it all, that Jesus is able to work in our brokenness. And sometimes that's the only way that Jesus can work. When we can let go and put aside our own egos, put aside our images of ourselves that we're trying to maintain, of our accolades and attention, and say, hey, yeah, we are broken people that need Jesus. Let's figure it out together. Now, I know we've been talking about this bleeding woman for a while, and it's an amazing story. I love her story, and I wish we had more time to unpack the story for her because there's so much else going on. But did you guys notice that there was still another person part of the story? Did you guys forget about him? This religious leader, Jairus? Verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking, some people came to the house of Jairus, the synagogue leader. Your daughter is dead, they said. Why bother the teacher anymore? Overhearing what they said, Jesus told him, don't be afraid, just believe. Now, I wonder what he must have been thinking in that moment. I wonder what must have been going on in his mind, because he was the one, you know, I don't know how much time has passed, but he was the one that at the very beginning approached Jesus on his knees and said, hey, my daughter is sick. I need your help, Jesus. And then Jesus came. He brought all his folks with him. They're on their way. And then they get interrupted by this woman, this outcast of society. And Jesus stopped everything, turned his attention toward her. And this religious leader, which is kind of sitting on the sidelines, pondering, hey, Jesus, you got some place to go. We got some place to be. My daughter is dying. You promised. You said that you would heal her. I wonder what must have been going on in his mind at that very moment. And I'm sure when this woman told the whole truth to her, right, Jesus took the time to wait. Jesus took the time to listen and spent all this attention on this woman. Right? This wasn't just a few minute thing. This might have been a while that he was sitting out there waiting. Who knows what must have been going on in Jairus' mind at this time? And then when someone from his house came in and said, don't bother the teacher any longer. Your daughter is dead. What must have been going on in his mind in that moment? Anger, frustration, maybe thoughts of, Jesus, how could you do this? Why did you waste time here? If we were just a little bit faster, we might have made it in time. Jesus, if you just didn't waste time here on this woman, we could have saved my daughter. What must have been going on in his mind? Maybe even started to blame Jesus a little bit. Jesus, you don't care about me. You don't care about me and my daughter. How could you do this? See, just like the bleeding woman, I think Jesus was inviting the synagogue leader Jairus into something more. It's almost as if he was saying, okay, you trust in me with your sick daughter? Are you going to trust me to raise the dead? I wonder, church, how many of us resonate with this part of the story. You know, maybe you've been waiting on Jesus for something for a while. Maybe you've been following down this path with him for a while, and you're getting frustrated that things haven't been happening, or there are promises that you know are true, but you haven't felt it yet. Or maybe you just feel like you're on the sidelines sometimes, and you feel like Jesus is focused on so many other things, but he's too busy to focus his time and attention on you. Maybe you feel a little neglected or lost in that moment. And instead of things getting better, things have actually gotten worse. Whatever the reason is, maybe God is inviting you into a deeper faith. Maybe even if the situation is getting worse, can we still trust Jesus in that moment? And I think that's my last number five reason of why pursuing Jesus makes sense and why it's good, is because Jesus' timing is perfect. And he works even when we can't see it. Now, I know you guys know how the rest of the story goes. Eventually, Jesus gets to the house. He's able to see and perform this amazing miracle and basically raise her up from the dead. And Jairus gets to be a part of this really cool interaction with Jesus in that room. And he's able to see just this amazing miracle happen. But a question for me is, how does this story continue for you? And I mentioned earlier that we're going to spend some time in prayer pretty soon. But maybe there's some ways that God is inviting you to respond. Maybe there's some ways that God wants to invite you today that may seem a little scary. And the first way is maybe you just need to say, hey, I need Jesus. And maybe there's some of you here that maybe you're on the fringe of church. Maybe you're just checking it out for the first time. You don't know what Jesus really means to you. And as you're hearing this message today, maybe there's an invitation there to say, yes, I think I need Jesus. And if that's you, I invite you to come up and get prayed for. Or even if you're trying to figure it out, I think there's an invitation there for you to see and check out what Jesus can do and will do in your life. Maybe you're watching this online. If you need to connect with the church or chat online, if there is a part of you that is welling up right now inside and saying, maybe there's more to this Jesus story than I need to go after, I invite you. This is the time. This is your chance. Jesus wants to do way more in your life than you can ever think of or imagine. Maybe there's some of us here that we've been relying so much on our positions and titles and affiliations that maybe we need to be a place where we need to pray for just, hey, God, how can I let those go so I can truly follow the way that you are guiding me? Maybe there's some of us here that have been in a place where we've been failing over and over and over again. And everything that you've tried, it's instead of getting better, it's actually gotten worse. I invite you to come up. Maybe it's a time to try Jesus. Will you really give your all to Jesus today? Maybe there's an ask. Come before the Lord today in prayer when we invite you up later and say, hey, Jesus, I've tried everything else. I need you. Help me get through this. Maybe there's some of you that you're starting to come to grips with what does it look like to be open in your brokenness and sharing with other people. If that's where you're at in your journey, I commend you 100%. Because as we talked about today, that God works in our brokenness. God works in our pains. You know, we have grief share. We have many different ways that people have really stepped up and said, yes, I'm figuring this Jesus journey out and I'm just as broken and messed up as you. If that's where you are in your journey and you need to get prayed for today because there's something deep that's hurting or irking inside your heart, maybe today is the day that you get prayed for. Maybe there's some of you right now that you just don't see where Jesus is at. You feel like he's been far away. You feel like he's been too busy with other people. You feel like he's left you behind, just like the synagogue leader Jairus. You're off dealing with other things. I don't know, Jesus, if you even care about me anymore. And if that's where your journey is at right now, I invite you. Maybe it's a time to get prayed for. It's time for you to be invited into something deeper. You know, and as I invite the worship team to come up, we're going to sing two songs. We wanted to make time for this today for some prayer. And I'm going to invite some of our leaders to come up. I know we're going to have, I think the Chows up there, Pastor Vince up there, Brother Mike. I think some of the young adult leaders, Jess or Marina Ball, or whoever else here from the leadership team who can pray for people. I'll be up here. I'll ask my wife to pray with me. But if there's something that resonated with you in some of those categories, maybe it's time for you to get invited up to share. Jesus is inviting you to share. And I want to let you know that there is no shame. There's no brokenness more or too much that Jesus can't manage or handle. He wants to meet with you today. Like I said, I've been prayed for by each and every one of the people here. Would you let yourself be prayed for today? God, as we just kick off this worship time, I pray that you would work in these next few songs. And maybe there's some folks here with just fear and trembling and they're not sure if they can raise their hand and say, here I am. They're not sure if it's worth it to reveal what they're going through. God, would you meet people where they're at right now? And as we pray for people, as people get prayed over, would you just have real encounters, transformative encounters with the way that people need you today? Amen.